from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny. The holiday season has officially started, and with it, the pressures of holiday shopping have also begun. What better gift than the gift of literature? Every year around this time, Forum opens our phones to our listeners to get your recommendations of the best books you've read this year. What keeps you sane during chaotic times? What book from the past have you returned to? And we'll be joined by the editor of the New York Times Book Review, and we'll want your recommendations for great reads over the busy holidays, or a good book to give. And that's next, after this news update. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The season of gift giving is in full swing, and with that can come gift anxiety. What should you get your dad, your best friend? Well, today on Forum, we're making the case for books again, and we want to hear from you. What book do you recommend as a gift or to help you get through this chaotic time? Let me give you the number right now. It's toll-free, 866-733-6786. Again, join us at 866-733-6786. And joining us for the hour to point out some of the best books of the year is New York Times Book Review editor Pamela Paul. Welcome back to Forum.
Thanks for having me.
Delighted to have you. And I'm looking actually at the cover of the Sunday Book Review of the New York Times and seeing a illustration of hands on a piano and a review of a piano trio of books. First one by our own John Adams about Debussy, and then another one about Schumann, and another one about Frédéric Chopin. How do you come to these decisions? This is kind of a thematic, I guess you have a whole team that curates, but decision to do three books about essentially great composers.
Well, that was interesting because we had assigned those books on the merits separately. There just happened to be three great books about romantic composers coming out this fall. And they were originally intended for our big holiday issue, which comes out this Sunday in print. And the reviewers for those books were so strong and the reviews themselves so strong and the books important enough that we thought, let's actually pull them out and sort of treat them as a trio here on the cover of the book review. And interestingly, one thing I loved about those reviews is that one of the reviewers, as you said, was John Adams, a composer. Another is Jeremy Denk, a pianist and a performer. And then the third, Corinna de Fonseca-Volheim, a musical critic. So you have three people who are within the world of classical music, but coming at it from different perspectives, reviewing those books.
Yeah, I'd like to follow that up with another question about how you decide who's going to do the reviews. We recently had Yuval Harari on, and his book was reviewed by Bill Gates, no less. It was also on the cover of the book review. How does a matchup like that take place?
Well, that was interesting. We'd wanted Bill Gates to review for us for a long time. As many people know, he sort of informally reviews books on his own, and he has his own book club, and he's a huge reader. As a consequence of that and just his life, he knows a lot of writers. So you can't find, you need to find someone that he doesn't have some kind of pre-existing relationship with in order to avoid a conflict of interest. And we thought that that book, with its sort of big ideas, would appeal to Bill Gates. So we had been in correspondence with him for a while trying to find the right book. And then that one felt like it was big enough, it was ambitious enough, and it wasn't sort of squarely within Bill Gates's wheelhouse that it felt predictable. We didn't know what he would say. And I think his review, I thought, was surprising and thoughtful. There were things he agreed with Harari on, and then he was very straightforward about what he didn't agree with.
Yeah, I would agree. It was indeed a thoughtful review. I was also inclined to ask about how you decide who to profile with that question about what's on your nightstand, which is, I guess, the boilerplate question about authors. We also had Ben Sass on this program, and I mention this because these interviews are available in our archives. Ben Sass' book was the one you chose for this last issue.
Well, we try to find a wide range of people for that, Colin. This is for By the Book, which is our weekly interview with people about their life through the lens of books. And the idea behind it is kind of twofold. You can read it in two very different levels. One is, it's a great way to learn about books that you didn't know about, to get recommendations. It's kind of this word of mouth from whether it's an author or a musician or another kind of performer or a public figure like Ben Sasse. But the other way to read it is a profile, as you said. It's not just an interview with a person, but you really, I think, can tell a lot about someone by what they choose to read or not read. If they only read, let's say, men authors, that says something about them. If they only read fiction, that says something else. Sometimes you can tell someone who doesn't really read that much at all. But again, I find that interesting because most interviews, as we know, don't necessarily focus on books or even address books at all. So I think this is a different way to see people that we think we might not know, or we think we might know, but we don't necessarily know this side of them.
Our guest is Pamela Paul. She's with us from New York, and she's editor of the New York Times Book Review, also author of a book called My Life with Bob, Flawed Heroine Keeps Book of Books, Plot Ensues, and also an expert on children's books, and we'll be able to talk about that with her as well. But right off the top of your head, Pamela Paul, recommendations, particularly for this season, for great reads?
Oh, gosh. Well, it depends on what you're looking for. I mean, we could start by talking about fiction. I think that one of the things I'm hearing from readers in general is that the world feels like a very serious place. There are people who like to read books that, you know, really tangle with and address current events in some way or a current moment. And then there are people who like escapism. And I have to say that by and large, for me, it's been about escapism. So I'm going to recommend some books that I think are comic in nature, or at least have a comic element or some kind of humor to them, which is something that I've been finding appealing lately. So, of course, there's Gary Steingart's novel, which actually does address our current moment, Lake Success. This is really a post-Trump novel. It's about a hedge fund manager, a Wall Street finance bro, you might call him, who basically, you know, abandons his job and his family and goes on a kind of road trip on a Greyhound bus. But it's really funny. It does have, of course, Steingart's, you know, sort of political seriousness and a dark edge to it. But there's so much humor in it. So I think that is, and it's been a bestseller. So clearly there are people who agree. Another book that also has, well, I guess it does combine the kind of politics of the moment, but again, with a lot of humor, is a debut collection of short stories by Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya, which is called Friday Black. And we actually profiled him recently. He is a debut author, as I said. And it's kind of a collection of often dystopian stories, many of which spring out of his experience working in a shopping mall, thus the title Friday Black, in which he, you know, reimagines Black Friday as almost like a, you know, people actually dead on the floor from trying to get to, you know, the latest microwave oven. So that's Friday Black. I think that's also a new, interesting novel. Another one that has a lot of humor in it, but also heart, The House of Broken Angels by Luis Alberto Urrea, which is a kind of big family saga about a Mexican-American family that I think, you know, gathers together to celebrate the birthday of the patriarch of the clan who is dying. But again, there's a lot of humor in it. So even though it sounds like gathering together for the death of a family member sounds sort of grim, it's not a grim book.
I read the Steingart, and I must say he always amuses me. He's very funny. And in the spirit of also looking backward and talking about books that hold up after many years, comic novel, kind of an archetypal comic novel, is Kingsley Amis, Father of Martin Amis's Lucky Jim, which I would put into the mix here because it does hold up. And it's, as you say, a relief this time of the year and also necessary for many people to read to get humor. We'll go to nonfiction shortly, but let me go to our callers first before we do that and talk about children's books as well. Pamela Paul with us, and so is Christy, is our first caller. Christy, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, ma'am. You're on the air.
Thank you. Yes, I was just introduced to a book, The Fifth Risk by Michael Lewis. I believe he's the author, and it was absolutely awesome. It's about how government works in a lot of regards, and the insights were amazing. It had humor. It read like fiction, and I think it's one of those great gift books because if the person already has it, they'd be thrilled to pass the extra copy on. It was really eye-opening and wonderful read.
Yeah, no, thank you for that suggestion. In fact, Michael Lewis, another local author here in the Bay Area, who has had quite a bit of success. Some thoughts from you about his work, Pamela Paul?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, he is just a master of narrative nonfiction storytelling. And this is a book that's kind of, on the face of it, seems incredibly boring. It's about, you know, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of the Interior. He takes four government departments and looks at how they've functioned historically, but then specifically how they are functioning under the current administration and the changes that have taken place since the 2016 election. And in his hands, it's totally riveting because he knows how to write character, he knows pacing, and he just it's no surprise to me that I think this was one of the first, if not the first, project announced by the Obamas as part of their deal with Netflix to create original series, because I think it's going to be fascinating.
Well, you talk about him as a master of narrative, and he's one of these authors who actually said in an interview we did that he had a professor who told him, don't be a writer. You don't have any likelihood of being a writer. Those kind of stories do continue to inspire, and let me thank the caller for that, and let me go to another caller. Ramia, good morning.
Good morning. This is Ramya here, and I would love to receive Becoming by Michelle Obama if somebody wants to gift me a book or anything for Christmas. And for children especially, I would like to give another suggestion other than Harry Potter, because my daughters don't like to read Harry Potter. I love the author Enid Blyton, and she was a British writer, and I love Secret Seven, and my daughters love to read those books too. Children love books, but we have to find the books that they're interested in.
Well, let me thank you for the call and go back to Pamela Paul, who has many wheelhouses, but one of the bigger ones is children's books. Any thoughts about the one she mentioned or other ones you might want to particularly recommend?
Well, it's, you know, Enid Blyton actually still remains popular, especially in the UK and sort of the greater English speaking world. She's not quite as popular here, although some of her books have been reissued in American editions in recent years. And also, you can now, of course, order those books directly from the UK. And I have two of my own kids have read and enjoyed them. One book that I would recommend that has the same kind of magical world as Harry Potter for a bit older. It's a young adult book, and it's a debut novel. It's called The Hazelwood by Melissa Albert. I just tore through this book after hearing a couple of people talk about it and recommend it. And it's one of our notable children's books of 2018. This is a great story about a teenage girl whose grandmother is a kind of cult fiction writer who's basically disappeared from her life. And she and her mother have been on the run for her entire childhood, where bad luck seems to constantly follow them. And the grandmother wrote books that were sort of set in a fairy tale world. And the action sort of takes off when the grandmother dies and the mother is suddenly kidnapped. And this teenage girl is left to find out, to sort of solve the mysteries of what happened to her mother, what happened to her grandmother, why can she not find this sort of this great cult novel or set of fairy tales that her grandmother told. And she, of course, inevitably, in a way, enters into that fairy tale world.
Speaking about young adult novels, you know this novel, The Hate U Give, which has been made into a film recently?
This is Angie Thomas. That book came out last year, so now it's available in paperback. And that's interesting because I think it's one of a number of recent really strong books, in particular for young adults, but there have been for middle grade as well, that really contend with contemporary issues. It's interesting. While kids, obviously, and teenagers still like escape fiction and fantasy, there is a real desire for them to see the issues that they care about reflected in the books they read. And so a number of books for kids, let's say in the 10 and older age range, have been dealing with quite explicitly issues around race, around gender, around immigration, around identity, and those issues are sort of being addressed head on in a way that kids seem to gravitate towards, I would say even more than in adult fiction.
You know, the other thing I'm struck by in the Sunday book reviews is just the potpourri of different things that you're able to wedge together. I mean, there's a book that's reviewed, a new book on U.S. foreign policy. There are a couple books by Nietzsche. There's also at the end something of a cartoon about Anne Sexton. You cover a lot of territory, and that's the idea, isn't it? I mean, with fiction and nonfiction, you give a melange, sort of?
Absolutely. I mean, it goes beyond fiction and nonfiction. Of course, there's poetry, but then you think within those two, you know, broad categories of fiction and nonfiction, there are so many subcategories that we're trying to address, whether it's genre or format or theme. So within fiction, you have, of course, global fiction and fiction in translation. You have science fiction, fantasy, romance, crime, thrillers, procedural, mystery, so-called literary fiction, more commercial fiction. It's just there's such a wide range. And then in nonfiction, of course, I mean, books really are just a medium through which you can discuss any subject. So you have biography and current affairs, foreign affairs, memoir, investigative work, books about music and the arts, biography. So what we try to do in each issue is, to a certain extent at least, find, you know, have, if you can't have something in every single category, at least have a wide range of categories. And then from issue to issue, sort of offer a balance of you know, short fiction one week and then perhaps some, you know, major novels. But to try to maintain so that someone picking up the book review, hopefully in a given week, can find at least one thing that they might be interested in reading.
You even have a short list, by the way, in each edition. We're talking to Pamela Paul. And what's the best book that you read in 2018 and why? We want to know. And we also want to hear from you about books you recommend. Here's Crystal. Crystal, join us. Hi.
Hi. I'd like to recommend Prisoners of Geography by Tim Marshall. If you've been following the news lately and you saw that the Chinese embassy was attacked by rebels from Balochistan and you're thinking, where is that? Marshall is a great resource. He talks about how countries are compelled to make decisions based on their geography and the challenges that geography presents. I just think it's unbelievably timely. He's got another book about walls that I also want to read. I think Americans are often a little bit geographically challenged, and this is a great way to get some more knowledge.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that recommendation. Let me read a few more that are coming in on our website. Andrew writes, Crossing the Continent by Robert Goodwin is an historical piece about the wreck of a Spanish ship around Tampa, Florida in about 1527 and the ensuing 15-year effort to get to Mexico to meet up with those conquistadors. The book is a stunning, jaw-dropping description of the human will to survive. Several years after reading it, I am still affected by its impact. And here's Jerome, who says, Marilynne Robinson is an author I keep coming back to. Her trilogy, Gilead, Home, and Layla, are classic and deep heart warmers for all seasons. And Linda says, best book of the year for me is Educated by Tara Westover, an unbelievable accomplishment in brilliant writing, depicting a harrowing life with great sophistication. The protagonist's choice between her family, however odd and demented, and being a person living in an international world of scholarship is head-spinning. And let's get another caller on here, and that's you. Eve, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on. I wanted to recommend, in line with what you guys were talking about earlier, needing just a little bit of escapism, a book called Hyperbole and a Half. It's by Ali Brosh. It is a quick read. Half of it is these beautiful, simple line drawings that she is able to convey so much expression with. And it's just a joyful, you know, humorous book about, you know, regular life instances. And then the other author would be anything by Nnedi Okorafor. I don't know that I'm saying her name right, but she writes Who Fears Death and several others, more of a fantasy.
Do you know these authors, Pamela Paul?
Not all of them, so I appreciate the recommendations.
Ali Bosch, and the author of Who Fears Yeah, thank you for those recommendations. Good to hear from you, Eve. I appreciate it. And we'll hear from another caller, and that's a caller up in Portland. Greg, good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to recommend a book that's quite the opposite of escapism. It's called The Five Invitations by Frank Rostiseski, and it's a book about lessons learned at the end of life. Frank has done a lot of work at end of life, and he tells those stories. But it's a very encouraging life, encouraging book about stepping fully into life. Quite an uplifting book. It's inspiring, and it kind of focuses our attention on what's important.
Yeah, thank you for that. We're familiar with Frank's work, and I didn't know he had a new book out, but he has certainly done a lot of work with death and dying. Some pioneering work, in fact, and appreciate very much that recommendation. Pamela Paul, let's talk about nonfiction. What do you like?
Well, there depends on the category. Again, going back to that, there's some great biographies. I would say that when I look at our best books of the year, at our notable books, there were sort of four categories of books that really stood out. Big biographies, investigations, great memoirs, and some really important but highly readable science books. So we could start off with biography. There is a big new single-volume biography of Churchill by the British historian Andrew Roberts, which our reviewer said was probably the best single-volume biography of Winston Churchill ever written, which is high praise because
there are a lot of them.
There have been many books about Winston Churchill. He is not an unexamined figure. And then Frederick Douglass, a new biography by David Blight, which was reviewed on our cover. I mean, this again is not only a very complete biography, but in certain ways a kind of reconsideration, a look at the abolitionist as both a public figure and also a private person. And that book is, I think, probably going to be considered the, fundamental biography of Frederick Douglass for years to come. There are a couple of sports biographies, too. This one actually came out late last year, but it's one of our notable books of the year. Jonathan Eig's biography of Muhammad Ali, which is called Ali, A Life. And then there were Arthur Ashe, another sports biography by Raymond Arsenault, another one of our notable books of the year. And then closely related, I would say, memoir. One of your callers earlier mentioned Tara Westover's Educated, which I thought was a phenomenal book and really did something new with memoir in that she was very open to allowing for alternative views of what took place in her family growing up. So she sort of fact-checked her own memories with the memories of her siblings. She grew up in a rural area with kind of extreme circumstances, a little bit of a kind of J.D. Vance meets The Glass Castle by Jeanette Walls. And she grew up not being schooled in any way and ended up going on to get a PhD from Oxford.
Yeah, that's a remarkable book. And so is the Blight book, which I have not actually read except in parts. And we have the author booked on our show coming up. So stay tuned for that. It'll be up ahead. In the meantime, stay tuned for more recommendations about what you should read, what you ought to read, what you might read, and indeed what you would be benefited by if you do read. We're talking to Pamela Paul, who is ongoing. How long are you going to be there? How long have you been there now? New York Times book editor.
I've been the editor of the Book Review since 2013.
And as long as you can keep cranking it out, right?
I will, yeah, as long as there are books, I am happy to review them.
And we'll hear your reviews and your thoughts and more from Pamela Paul. Stay tuned. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is an hour all about books, books you may want to read as the season indeed perhaps urges you to get books as gifts, which I guess we are doing sort of under the radar here, urging you to buy books and urging you to support authors and their work. Editor of the New York Times Book Review is with us, Pamela Paul, and she's the author of a book called Life with Bob. Flawed Heroine keeps Plot Ensues. And we want to know, what's the best book you read in the year 2018 and why? Here's a recommendation from Nick, who says, 10 Arguments for Deleting Your Social Media Accounts Right Now by Jared Lanier. And also, we featured him on Forum. That interview's in our archives. And he goes on, I guess this is a comment from the same listener, Zuckerberg and Sandberg are stinking up the planet. That's not a subtitle. That's a comment from Nick. Another suggestion about The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. And let's hear more of our listeners and what you have to suggest. Alex, welcome. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you for taking my call.
What are you recommending, Alex?
Ishmael by Daniel Quinn.
Ishmael by Daniel Quinn. Why are you recommending it?
I think that the environment problem has been written about for too long, And with all the wildfires, the hurricanes and all the mass destruction that is going on, it's time to stop. And for us to stop history, we have to learn about it. And Daniel Quinn and many other writers have been trying to get humans' attention to overpopulation, complete, you know, production of buildings and everything else. Is just time for us to stop and think and realize that we are killing the planet.
Well, thank you for that recommendation, Alex. It's not a book or author I know. Do you, Pamela Paul?
No. Mm-mm.
Okay, maybe.
But I would recommend for people who are interested in the environment and attentive to climate change, a novel as something of a bit of a change, which is The Overstory by Richard Powers, in which the novelist, who often takes on issues around the environment, has his protagonists as the trees in that novel. So that's The Overstory.
And thank you for the recommendation, Alex. Here's Nancy recommending a book that someone was speaking very highly about to me this past weekend, and who was one of the authors featured in the annual National Kidney Foundation Literary Luncheon, which I MC every year, but not this year. Nancy writes, "For all of us who love and appreciate libraries, Susan Orlean's The Library Book is a page-turner about the 1986 fire of the L.A. Central Library." I have a sneaking suspicion you know that book, Pamela Paul.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Susan Orlean, again, another great storyteller. Actually, Michael Lewis reviewed that book for us, which was a fun pairing because they're both such inventive and persuasive and engaging writers. But that book, I think, does a great job of, you know, tying together this real crime of arson in Los Angeles with the main library, with just the history of libraries and all of the characters that populate the library and, you know, the books that are in them. So
another novel I'm sure you probably know and I enjoyed very much, Nora recommends. She said, "I just finished A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Tals, one of the best books I've ever read."
Yeah, those books have been, you know, bestsellers. He used to be a lawyer and then wrote these two books and sort of right out of the gate has had, you know, huge success. It's essentially been on book tour, I think, you know, ever since that book came out, which is now, I think, 2 years ago.
And all these lawyers who have made it as novelists, I'm thinking, of course, about Grisham, but also doctors. Our own Abraham Verghese, who's at Stanford, or Ethan Kanan, who's now at Iowa as a professor, both MDs and both turning out books with all kinds of detail about medicine. There's a strong readership for those kind of books, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a number of science books that I want to mention that are among, I think, among our notable books of the year. There were several really strong books about DNA and heredity. One of them is Carl Zimmer's She Has Her Mother's Laugh, The Powers, Perversions, and Potential of Hereditary. And then there was another one, The Tangled Tree, by David Quammen, another great science writer, who writes about how the sort of the tree of life that we all learn, you know, that Darwin sort of branching off is much more complicated than we previously knew, that things don't just kind of go vertically up and down a family tree or a hereditary tree, but actually can travel horizontally, where traits and genes are sort of transferred from branch to branch across a family tree, which I thought was fascinating. And then another book, actually, there are two really good books this year about dinosaurs. I'll just talk about one of them, The Dinosaur Artist, Obsession, Betrayal, and the Quest for Earth's Ultimate Trophy by Paige Williams. She's a writer for The New Yorker. And this is about dinosaurs, but sort of not. It's about a guy who was caught smuggling a stolen Tyrannosaurus Rex skeleton into America, and kind of about the dark network of people who traffic in pilfered fossils.
I'm going to ask you a question that I'm often asked, and I know you are probably asked even more often than I am. How many books a week do you read?
Oh, are you kidding? Plural? It's not that many. I mean, I used to joke that if you counted picture books, my numbers would be high back when my kids were reading primarily picture books. But, you know, in reality, I'm like anyone else with a full-time job and three full-time kids and, you know, only a limited time to read on my commute and many distractions. So I try to read a book a week, but I am not a fast reader and I am often trying to read sort of several things at once. So and then there are books that I don't necessarily have to read from cover to cover that are really for my work here at the New York Times covering the world of books. And so those books I can kind of read around or dip in and out of and not have to read from beginning to end. But for my own personal reading, I really like to finish books. And for that, I probably, if I'm lucky, get through a book a week.
Isn't it funny, though, how people assume if you live in the world of books, you must not only read an extraordinary volume of books, but you must be a fast reader, an extraordinarily fast reader. Here's some
more.
Go ahead.
Please. I think for to be a book critic, you do have to be a fast reader. Otherwise, it's just sheer torture. People think it must be a very leisurely thing to be a full-time book critic because all you have to do is sit around and read. But when you think about the time it might take to finish, say, a 500-page biography and write something coherent and persuasive and interesting about it, it's a hard job.
Agreed. Here's some more recommendations from listeners. Janice writes, I'm giving a gift pack of She Persisted by Chelsea Clinton. Whose Boat Is This? Comprised of Donald Trump quotes made after Hurricane Florence. And Marlon Bundo, a satire on Mike Pence's wife's book by John Oliver. All proceeds from these books go to appropriate charities. And Idlem writes, I strongly recommend the book Hypatia by Edward J. Watts about the legend of Hypatia of Alexandria, the first woman in recorded history who was a mathematician, astronomer, inventor, and humanist. And we go to more of your calls. Let me go next to Don. Don, join us.
Yeah, hi. Thank you very much. Book I wanted to recommend is it's not a fiction. It's really, I guess it falls into science and health and diet. It's How Not to Die by Dr. Michael Greger. And I was pointed at it after having a health scare, heart-related health scare. And what's great about it is, although there are many plant-based diet physicians, whether it's Dr. Ornish or McDougall, or there's a whole host of them, what's great about Dr. Greger is he really writes sort of tongue-in-cheek. It's very approachable. It's very readable. And it breaks down, essentially, each modern Western disease and how your diet and what particular foods you should or shouldn't consume to really help you attain really good health. And I found it extremely beneficial for myself. And although it might be a funny thing to gift to someone or recommend to someone, I recommend it.
You have done a recommendation, and thank you for that. Good to hear from you this morning. And any comment from you, Pamela?
No, I'm happy to hear about books that I haven't read.
Well, we'll probably hear from some more before the hour is over. How do you, just the curating process, Andrea Barrett, who is a fiction writer and a scientist, who I have been very high on for many years now, does a review in the most recent book review issue of the Louisa Hall book. Again, where do you come to Andrea Barrett? Or how does that happen?
Well, you know, it's the process is that there is an editor who is assigned to preview books, is what we call it, a preview editor, and they go through the galleys and they decide what they think deserves a review. And once they've decided that something deserves to be reviewed, they will come in and we'll have a meeting, the senior editors and that editor, to discuss the book and go down a list. Now, sometimes they might come in, there were three people on the list, sometimes it might be 10 people, and they'll go through and explain what led them to each of these potential reviewers. And it's different things. You know, the person might, let's say, have a work of fiction that deals with a historical, a real historical circumstance, which the Louisa Hall did, and say, well, we could go with someone whose style reminds me of, you know, Louisa Hall's style, someone we think might appreciate Louisa Hall. It might be a critic. We might go with someone who knows something about the actual history and the science that's dealt with in the book. We might go with an academic. So there are a lot of different kind of angles that you can take. And then often we don't, you know, the first person we ask on our list might be busy or might have a conflict of interest. I can't tell you how many times it happens that we ask someone to review a book and we think this is the perfect match. This person is going to be great. And they'll say either, you know, I blurbed the book or that's my best friend or we have the same agent. So there are, you know, we have to vet out those obvious conflicts of interest and any non-obvious ones and try to find someone who we think will take the book on its merits. But it's a process each time. And often we're trying to get something that doesn't feel too on the nose, too matchy-matchy, too obvious. Someone who might really have an interesting perspective, have something unexpected to say. And I have to say another thing that we love as editors is when we assign something to someone because we really don't know what they'll think of it. And now we're curious. You know, we don't know what this reviewer might make of this novel. And we want to read it as much as we think our readers would want to read it.
Talking to New York Times Book Review editor Pamela Paul, and let me read a tweet from Shirley who says, my recommendation is from 2013, Mary Oliver's Dog Songs. It's a poetry collection that would be a good gift for dog lovers. A sample, be prepared. A dog is adorable and noble. A dog is true and loving friend. A dog is also a hedonist. And here's Rick who says, I'm reading David Copperfield this holiday. It's an escape to another time, yet realistic and very funny as well. Dickens' most autobiographical book and his personal favorite. Any Dickens would be good during Christmas time, in addition, of course, to Christmas Carol.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Here's George. George, you're on the air with us. Hi.
Good morning. I have a biography for you this morning about Leonardo da Vinci by Walter Isaacson. It's a fairly new book, recently published. What I liked about it was that it's not so much full of hyperbole saying what a genius and what a visionary he was, but instead it focuses on more who he actually was as a person. It kind of follows him throughout his life and the people he interacted with. He had a little bit of a tiff with Michelangelo. But what Isaacson says and points out is that Da Vinci was a really unusually curious person, a self-taught person, and he had a problem with perfection. He didn't believe in the saying, don't let perfect be the enemy of the good. He would say, don't let good be the enemy of the perfect.
Very good review. Thank you, George. And
yes.
A book that, by the way, I loved also for its paintings in the book. You know it, of course.
Yes. Yeah, and it's a beautifully produced book, actually. The publisher took care with that volume so that the artwork and the drawings that are in it are really well represented in the book. So it is a really nice book to think about when it comes to holiday gifts.
And here's Savala, who writes, Golden Hill by Francis Spufford transports you vividly and with sensuous detail to colonial New York City, but keeps you guessing because it's a mystery. Best book I've read in several years. Jeffrey says, two books that have helped this white guy think about racism and how to be anti-racist in daily life, Stamped from the Beginning by Ibram Kendi and White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo. And let me go to more of your calls. Let's go next to Nancy. Nancy, hi.
Hi. I read a number of really good books last year, but one I'm going to recommend today is a book by Mark Halperin. It's his latest book, and it's called Paris in the Present Sense. And I've read several of his books, and he is the most gorgeous writer. And this one, it interested me in the beginning because it's about an old man who is a cellist, and I love cellos, so I thought, well, why not?
Halperin is a great stylist, as I think you've suggested.
Absolutely.
But I'll tell you something that may surprise you. He was also, at least as I always knew him, a Republican.
Yes. Yeah, he used to write speeches, too.
Don't tell me that. Please
sorry.
Don't tell me that.
Nancy's calling from Berkeley. So. But, you know, there's something about that, Pamela Paul. In fact, I think your predecessor, Tannenhaus, has written about this, how so many authors, especially famed authors that are admired and greatly celebrated, are, well, if not progressives or Democrats, Democratic Party, certainly on the left.
Well, I would say a fiction, that's probably more so true than nonfiction.
Nonfiction
writers really, you run the spectrum from very liberal to very conservative. But it is true that there are not as many. I mean, Tom Clancy was one, obviously now dead, although there are still books written sort of in his name and style. But the number of sort of outspoken conservative fiction writers are, you know, not as great as ones who are more liberal. Tom Mallon is another one who writes political fiction, sort of more on the conservative side. So there are a few, but rarer than in nonfiction for sure.
There's a movie now which I would recommend about a character named Lee Israel, who was a biographer. In fact, she was writing a biography of Fanny Bryce, played by Melissa McCarthy, and she goes to see her agent, who is also Tom Clancy's agent, and the agent is played by Jane Curtin. And she says, you know, you're giving million-dollar advances and so forth to this right-wing troglodyte, and I can't even get an advance to pay my rent. It's just part of the actual entertainment in that movie, which was based on an actual book by Lee Israel. Let me get some more callers aboard here. We get to Suresh next. Suresh, welcome.
Yeah, hi there.
Hi.
I'm recommending a book called An Era of Darkness by Shashi Tharoor. And I'm mentioning it because of an earlier mention about the Churchill biography, a new one that's coming out. And I want to be sure that people understand that there was an aspect of Churchill that may not be covered in that book. And that is that when during the colonial era, he was a racist and a mass murderer. He thought of Indians as people who were inferior to the British, and he diverted food in 1943 to the British troops and created a famine that resulted in many millions of people dying.
There is a very dark side to Churchill's...
It was not brought up in the movie at all recently, and I don't know if it's going to be brought up in this biography, but I think people should know about it.
No, I'm glad you brought that up, because it raises an interesting question for you, Pamela Paul. That is, you know, Churchill is one of the great icons of our time, and yet there was that darker side of imperialism and certainly not being exactly compassionate or empathic when it came to people of darker colors. What do you do when you get a book that really takes down an icon?
Well, I mean, I think that that's an important part of writing history, is to re-examine figures who might once have been venerated and now are due for re-examination. But we certainly don't judge a book by, you know, our opinion about the topic, because you can write a terrific book about someone who might be entirely despicable, and it doesn't mean that it's not worth reading about and not worth knowing about. I would offer up another biography that made our list of 100 notables here at the Book Review, just as a counterpoint then to the Churchill, and in response to your caller, which is the second volume of a monumental biography of Gandhi. It's called Gandhi. This is the second volume, The Years That Changed the World, 1914 to 1948, by Ramachandra Guha. The first book was also one of our notable books of the year, and the story continues in this second volume.
There's also a biography of Gandhi by the former editor of the New York Times. What happens when you get, for example, an author who happens to be tied to the Times?
We get them all the time. Everyone at the Times seems to be writing a book. You know, what we do is we look at it as we look at any other book. I would say that the conflict of interest issues, obviously, are more complicated, because if you write for the Times, for example, you cannot be reviewed by someone who is at one of our major competitors, whether it's the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post. And obviously, if you write for the Times, you tend to have many contacts within the world that you occupy. So you just have to suss out to make sure that you aren't asking someone who's been a source or been a subject of the person whose book is in question. But really, you know, they're the same things that we come upon with any other book by any other non-Times related author. I would say that it's not super fun when our reviewer gives one of our colleagues a negative review, because obviously we're journalists. We're not going to change that review in any way or the substance of that judgment. That obviously means an unhappy colleague that you might bump into in the elevator.
So what happens, for example, when you have a reviewer who says, I don't know this author, and you suss it out, to use your word, as best you can, but turns out they do know that author and they wanted to review the book because they're maybe even allied with the author?
Well, it's interesting the way in which some people judge conflicts of interest differently from the way we do. We once asked someone if they would be willing to review the book, and they said, a book, and the person said yes. We said, do you have any conflicts of interest? And the person said, well, it's been many years since we slept together and we no longer live together, so I don't have any conflict of interest at all, which, of course, did not fly with us. So it's, you know, we do the best that we can. We try to avoid friends reviewing friends and enemies reviewing enemies. enemies, and even people who are directly competitive with one another, because it's hard to, you know, sort of take yourself out of that equation. And look, some people can do it really well, but not everyone can. And that's why some people are good critics and other people, it's just, you know, it's its own form of writing and its own form of journalism.
Here's another author who we featured on Forum, recommendation for Michael Pollan's book, How to Change Your Mind, a must-read for everyone who wants to open their mind. Thank Karen for that. And here's Debbie, who writes, my two favorites this year are both nonfiction. God Save Texas by Lawrence Wright. It's kind of a literary travelogue of a state that is just as original as California. And the second, Fruit of the Drunken Tree. It's about the turmoil in Colombia in the 80s. And you sighed when you heard the Lawrence Wright one, Pamela Paul.
Both of them are so great. And both of them, the Fruit of the Drunken Tree, I think that came out earlier this year. The God Save Texas is on our notable lists. And, you know, Lawrence Wright is just so fantastic. I think his last book, 13 Days in September, made our 10 best books list. There's, of course, his great book, The Looming Tower, which is still holds up and is so relevant about the rise of Al-Qaeda. And then his amazing book about Scientology. Just everything that he does is so engaging. And he's just a really good journalist and goes out and he talks to people and does the reporting.
And writes plays as well.
He had one here. I don't know what he doesn't do.
Here's Azran, who says, Rise and Kill First by Ronan Bergman. It's a gripping and mind-blowing history of the Israeli intelligence machinery. I cannot recommend it enough. And let's hear more of your recommendations from Paul in Vallejo. Good morning.
Good morning. I want to recommend The Magic Shop. It's a very readable memoir by Dr. Doty, who is the head of the Institute for the Study of Compassion at Stanford. And it chronicles his story, how it's kind of in the Carlos Castaneda genre, in that he meets a mysterious person early in his life and who teaches him how to meditate and how to relax and visualize.
Does that include peyote, or I'm just curious when you mentioned Castaneda?
Well, it didn't, because he was 12 years old.
Oh, okay, good.
Well, it might have. Anyway, it is a very readable book, and Dr. Doty has had a very notable life, and it's worth picking up.
Good recommendation.
The Magic Shop.
The Magic Shop. Yep. Thank you, by Doty, a name well known in this area. Again, I thank you for the call, and let's hear what Chad has to recommend. Chad. Thank you for waiting. Join us.
Yeah, hello. I'd like to recommend a children's book, an illustrated kids book. It's called Boxes for Katya by Candace Fleming. And I'm recommending it because in the age of Brexit and America First, it's a really touching story about an American girl and a Dutch girl who become pen pals. It's after World War II in Holland, and they're short on supplies, and Americans are sending care packages over there. And it's kind of a really nice description of this era through the eyes of these little kids. And it also has writing physical letters in it, which I think is pretty cool for kids to read about that nowadays. Yeah.
This is one I suspect you know, Pamela Paul.
Well, Candace Fleming, she's so good. She does these great narrative nonfiction books that are for middle grade readers, sometimes for young adults. Some of them are biographies, some are straight history. And she also does picture books. And she just, everything she does is, you know, she does all of the research. The writing is accessible, tend to be really well done in terms of photography and illustration. So I would recommend anything by Candace Fleming for kids.
Again, our guest is Pamela Paul, editor of the New York Times Book Review and author of My Life with Bob. And let me thank the caller and go right to another caller. Rabia, good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. I would love to recommend the book Big Chicken by Maren McNeil. It's a history of the antibiotic use in the poultry industry, which might seem really droll, but it was actually written in an excellent narrative style, and the opening scene takes place in San Jose. And I think it empowers people who want to make healthy food choices to know a little bit more about what they're doing for their families and for their community.
Sounds like an important book. A Big Chicken is the title?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for that call. And we're just going to go on with your recommendations and hear next from Anwar. Anwar, welcome.
Hi. I wanted to recommend A Mind of Your Own by Dr. Kelly Brogan.
Tell us why you're recommending it.
It was eye-opening for me, and it helped me actually get more fit and more healthy, and it also helped me to understand the data approach to a lot of what's happening in America with, you know, kind of the influences of medicine on children or people who might be struggling in different ways, right? It's very detailed analysis of why maybe we should reconsider some of the type of prescriptions people take.
Okay, Anwar, thank you for that recommendation. Good to hear from you. And here's Chris, who says, I just finished The Girl Who Slept with God by Valerie Berlinsky, a fascinating story of a conservative Christian family in Idaho in the 70s. The story revolves around a daughter who has become pregnant while on a mission to Mexico. The novel is beautifully written with deep, heartfelt characterization. Although usually a slow reader, I sped through this story. Let's hear from another caller, and that's you. Cecile, good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to recommend a wonderful book of essays, actually they're lectures, called Madness, Rack, and Honey by the poet Mary Ruffel. I still haven't been able to get into her poetry, but these lectures are just incredibly wonderful. They're quirky, and what I love is when I feel I'm really entering new territory for myself. So I highly recommend that. I've also been really loving Zadie Smith's essays, Feel Free, particularly her essays on visual artists. She writes about the photographer who took photos of Billie Holiday, and she writes about Mark Bradford and one other painter. Oh, I'm forgetting right now, but they're wonderful essays. And her first one is on a bookstore in England, and of course it made me cry.
Well, thank you for that. Humor as well as tears, and good to hear from you. We've come to the end of the hour. Pamela Paul, I'm going to put a little critical pressure on you. You mentioned a number of comic novels, good lighter novels at the top. Which one would be at the top of those?
Let's see. Why don't I, in all fairness, do a couple of dark novels, The Witch Elm by Tana French and The Perfect Nanny by Leila Slimani. If you don't want funny, those are two that I would highly recommend.
Yeah, we had her on for The Perfect Nanny, and that's quite a book. It stays with you. Well, always good to have you, Pamela Paul, and so thankful for all your recommendations here this morning. Appreciate your being with us.
It was terrific being here. Thanks so much.
It's Pamela Paul, editor of the New York Times Book Review and author of My Life with Bob. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated in the evening. We thank all of you who made recommendations. Stay tuned for more on KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.